21. As the train neared Memphis, Virgil Snope ceased talking and began to grow quieter and quieter, while on the contrary, his companion, eating from a paraffin paper package of popcorn and molasses, grew livelier and livelier, with a quality something like intoxication, seeming not to notice the inverse state of his friend. He was still talking away when, carrying their new imitation leather suitcases, their new hats slanted above their shaven necks, they descended at the station. In the waiting room, Fonzo said,
"Well, what are we going to do first?"
Virgil said nothing. Someone jostled them. Fonzo caught at his hat.
"What are we going to do?" he said.
Then he looked at Virgil, at his face.
"What's the matter?"
"Ain't nothing the matter," Virgil said.
"Well, what are we going to do? You've been here before, I ain't."
"I reckon we better kind of look around," Virgil said.
Fonzo was watching him, his blue eyes like china.
"What's the matter with you? All the time on a train you was talking about how many times you've been to Memphis. I bet you ain't never but—"
Someone jostled them, thrust them apart. A stream of people began to flow between them. Clutching his suitcase and hat, Fonzo fought his way back to his friend.
"I have to," Virgil said, looking glassily about.
"Well, what we gonna do then? It won't be open till 8 o'clock in the morning."
"What you in such a rush for, then?"
"Well, I don't aim to stay here all night."
"What did you do when you was here before?"
"Went to the hotel," Virgil said.
"Which one? They got more than one here. You reckon all these folks could stay in one hotel? Which one was it?"
Virgil's eyes were also a pale false blue. He looked glassily about.
"The Gayoso Hotel," he said.
"Well, let's go to it," Fonzo said.
They moved toward the exit. A man shouted "taxi" at them. A red cap tried to take Fonzo's bag.
"Look out,"
he said, drawing it back. On the street, more cabmen barked at them.
"So, this is Memphis," Fonzo said. "Which way is it now?"
He had no answer. He looked around and saw Virgil in the act of turning away from a cabman.
"What you—"
"Up this way," Virgil said. "It ain't far."
It was a mile and a half. From time to time, they swapped hands with the bags.
"So, this is Memphis," Fonzo said. "Where have I been all my life?"
When they entered the Gayoso, a porter offered to take the bags. They brushed past him and entered, walking gingerly on the tile floor. Virgil stopped.
"Come on," Fonzo said.
"Wait," Virgil said.
"Thought you was here before,"
Fonzo said.
"I was. This here place is too high. They'll want a dollar a day here."
"What we gonna do then?"
"Let's kind of look around."
They returned to the street. It was 5 o'clock. They went on looking about, carrying the suitcases. They came to another hotel. Looking in, they saw marble, brass cuspidors, hurrying bellboys, people sitting among potted plants.
"That 'un'll be just as bad," Virgil said.
"What are we going to do then? We can't walk around all night."
"Let's get off this here street," Virgil said.
They left Main Street. At the next corner, Virgil turned again.
"Let's look down this way. Get away from all that air plate glass and monkey niggers. That's what you have to pay for in them places."
"Why? It's already bought when we got there. How come we have to pay for it?
Suppose somebody broke it while we was there. Suppose they couldn't catch you done it. You reckon they'd let us out without and we paid our share?"
At 5:30, they entered a narrow, dingy street of frame houses and junkyards. Presently, they came to a three-story house in a small, grassless yard. Before the entrance, a latticework false entry leaned. On the steps sat a big woman in a Mother Hubbard, watching two fluffy white dogs which moved about the yard.
"Let's try that one," Fonzo said.
That ain't no hotel. Where's her sign?
Why ain't it?
Fonzo said. Course it is. Who ever heard of anybody just living in a 3-story house?
We can't go in this way, Virgil said. This here's the back.
Don't you see that privy?
Jerking his head toward the lattice.
Well, let's go around the front then, Fonzo said. Come on.
They went around the block. The opposite side was filled by a row of automobile sales rooms. They stood in the middle of the block, their suitcases in their right hands.
I don't believe you ever was here before, no ways, Fonzo said.
Let's go back. That must have been the front.
With the privy built onto the front door?
Fonzo said. We can ask that lady.
Who can? I ain't.
Let's go back and see anyway.
They returned. The woman and the dogs were gone.
Now you done it, Fonzo said. Ain't you?
Let's wait a while. Maybe she'll come back.
It's almost 7 o'clock, Fonzo said.
They set the bags down beside the fence. The lights had come on, quivering high in the serried windows against the tall, serene western sky.
I can smell ham, too, Fonzo said.
A cab drew up. A plump blonde woman got out, followed by a man. They watched them go up the walk and enter the lattice. Fonzo sucked his breath across his teeth.
Darned if they didn't, he whispered.
Maybe it's her husband, Virgil said. Fonzo picked up his bag.
Come on.
Wait, Virgil said. Give them a little time. They waited. The man came out and got in the cab and went away.
Can't be her husband, Fonzo said. I wouldn't have never left. Come on.
He entered the gate.
Wait, Virgil said.
You can. Fonzo said.
Virgil took his bag and followed. He stopped while Fonzo opened the lattice gingerly and peered in.
Oh, hell, he said.
He entered. There was another door with curtained glass. Fonzo knocked.
Why didn't you push that air button? Virgil said. Don't you know city folks don't answer no knock?
All right,
Fonzo said. He rang the bell. The door opened. It was the woman in the Mother Hubbard. They could hear the dogs behind her.
Got your extra room?
Fonzo said. Miss Reba looked at them, at their new hats and the suitcases.
Who sent you here?
She said.
Didn't nobody. We just picked it out.
Miss Reba looked at him.
Them hotels is too high.
Miss Reba breathed harshly.
What are you boys doing?
We come here on business, Fonzo said. We aim to stay a good spell.
If it ain't too high, Virgil said. Miss Reba looked at him.
Where you from, honey?
They told her, and their names.
We aim to be here a month or more, if it suits us.
Why, I reckon so, she said after a while.
She looked at them.
I can let you have a room, but I'll have to charge you extra whenever you do business in it.
I got my living to make like everybody else.
We ain't, Fonzo said. We'll do our business at the college.
What college?
Miss Reba said.
The barber's college, Fonzo said.
Look here, Miss Reba said.
You little whippersnapper.
Then she began to laugh, her hand at her breast. They watched her soberly while she laughed in harsh gasps.
Lord, Lord, she said. Come in here.
The room was at the top of the house, at the back. Miss Reba showed them the bath. When she put her hand on the door, a woman's voice said, "Just a minute, dearie." And the door opened, and she passed them in a kimono. They watched her go up the hall, rocked a little to their young foundations by a trail of scent which she left. Fonzo nudged Virgil surreptitiously. In their room again, he said,
"That was another one. She's got two daughters. Hold me, big boy. I'm heading for the hen house.
They didn't go to sleep for some time that first night, but with the strange bed and room and the voices, they could hear the city, evocative and strange, imminent and remote, threat and promise both, a deep, steady sound upon which invisible lights glittered and wavered, colored, coiling shapes of splendor in which already women were beginning to move in suave attitudes of new delights and strange, nostalgic promises. Fonzo thought of himself surrounded by tier upon tier of drawn shades, rose-colored, beyond which, in a murmur of silk and panting whispers, the apotheosis of his youth assumed a thousand avatars.
Maybe it'll begin tomorrow, he thought. Maybe by tomorrow night.
A crack of light came over the top of the shade and sprawled in a spreading fan upon the ceiling. Beneath the window he could hear a voice, a woman's, then a man's. They blended, murmured. A door closed. Someone came up the stairs in swishing garments on the swift, hard heels of a woman. He began to hear sounds in the house, voices, laughter. A mechanical piano began to play.
Hear them? He whispered.
She's got a big family, I reckon, Virgil said, his voice already dull with sleep.
Family, hell, Fonzo said. It's a party. Wish I was to it.
On the third day, as they were leaving the house in the morning, Miss Reba met them at the door. She wanted to use their room in the afternoons while they were absent. There was to be a detectives' convention in town, and business would look up some, she said.
Your things will be all right. I'll have Minnie lock everything up beforehand. Ain't nobody going to steal nothing from you in my house.
What business you reckon she's in? Fonzo said when they reached the street.
Don't know, Virgil said.
Wish I worked for her anyway, Fonzo said, with all them women in kimonos and such running around.
Wouldn't do you no good, Virgil said. They're all married. Ain't you heard them?
The next afternoon, when they returned from the school, they found a woman's undergarment under the washstand. Fonzo picked it up.
She's a dressmaker, he said.
Reckon so, Virgil said.
Look and see if they've taken anything of yourn.
The house appeared to be filled with people who did not sleep at night at all. They could hear them at all hours, running up and down the stairs, and always Fonzo would be conscious of women, of female flesh. It got to where he seemed to lie in his celibate bed, surrounded by women, and he would lie beside the steadily snoring Virgil, his ears strained for the murmurs, the whispers of silk that came through the walls and the floor, that seemed to be as much a part of both as the planks and the plaster, thinking that he had been in Memphis 10 days, yet the extent of his acquaintance was a few of his fellow pupils at the school. After Virgil was asleep, he would rise and unlock the door and leave it ajar, but nothing happened. On the 12th day, he told Virgil they were going visiting with one of the barber students.
Where? Virgil said.
That's all right. You come on. I done find out something. And when I think I've been here 2 weeks without knowing about it.
What's it gonna cost? Virgil said.
When'd you ever have any fun for nothing? Fonzo said. Come on.
I'll go, Virgil said. But I ain't gonna promise to spend nothing.
You wait and say that when we get there, Fonzo said.
The barber took them to a brothel. When they came out, Fonzo said,
"And think I've been here 2 weeks without never knowing about that house."
"I wish you hadn't never learned," Virgil said. "It cost $3.
"Wasn't it worth it?"
Fonzo said. "Ain't nothing worth $3 you can't tote off with you," Virgil said.
When they reached home, Fonzo stopped.
"We got to sneak in now," he said. "If she was to find out where we've been and what we've been doing,
She might not let us stay in the house with them ladies no more.
That's so, Virgil said. Dern you. Here you done made me spend $3, and now you fixin' to get us both throwed out.
You do like I do, Fonzo said. That's all you got to do. Don't say nothing.
Minnie let them in. The piano was going full blast. Miss Reba appeared in a door with a tin cup in her hand.
Well, well, she said. You boys been out mighty late tonight?
Yes'm,
Fonzo said, prodding Virgil toward the stairs. We've been to prayer meeting. In bed, in the dark, they could still hear the piano.
You made me spend $3, Virgil said.
Oh, shut up, Fonzo said. When I think I've been here for 2 whole weeks almost.
The next afternoon they came home through the dusk with the lights winking on, beginning to flare and gleam, and the women on their twinkling blonde legs meeting men and getting into automobiles and such.
How about that $3 now?
Fonzo said.
I reckon we better not go every night, Virgil said. It'll cost too much.
That's right, Fonzo said. Somebody might see us and tell her.
They waited 2 nights.
Now it'll be $6, Virgil said.
Don't come then, Fonzo said.
When they returned home, Fonzo said,
Try to act like something this time. She near about caught us before on account of the way you acted.
What if she does? Virgil said in a sullen voice. She can't eat us.
They stood outside the lattice, whispering.
How you know she can't?
Fonzo said.
She don't want to, then.
How you know she don't want to?
Maybe she don't, Virgil said.
Fonzo opened the lattice door.
I can't eat that $6 no ways, Virgil said. Wished I could.
Minnie let them in. She said,
Somebody hunting you all.
They waited in the hall.
We done caught now, Virgil said. I told you about throwing that money away.
Oh, shut up,
Fonzo said. A man emerged from a door, a big man with his hat cocked over one ear, his arm about a blonde woman in a red dress.
There's Clarence, Virgil said.
In their room, Clarence said,
How'd you get into this place?
Just found it, Virgil said.
They told him about it. He sat on the bed in his soiled hat, a cigar in his fingers.
Where you been tonight? He said.
They didn't answer. They looked at him with blank, watchful faces.
Come on, I know. Where was it?
They told him.
Cost me $3, too. Virgil said.
I'll be darned if you ain't the biggest fool this side of Jackson, Clarence said. Come on here.
They followed sheepishly. He led them from the house, and for 3 or 4 blocks, they crossed a street of Negro stores and theaters and turned into a narrow, dark street and stopped at a house with red shades in the lighted windows. Clarence rang the bell. They could hear music inside and shrill voices and feet. They were admitted into a bare hallway where 2 shabby Negro men argued with a drunk white man in greasy overalls. Through an open door, they saw a room filled with coffee-colored women in bright dresses with ornate hair and golden smiles.
Them's niggers, Virgil said.
Course they're niggers, Clarence said. But see this?
He waved a banknote in his cousin's face.
This stuff is colorblind.